The broadcast is now starting. All attendees are in listen-only mode.
Okay. Welcome. Welcome back, some of you. some with great endurance. And you know what I'd like to say? I was just thinking, two kinds of schools are predicted for the future. They are esoteric schools, and they will have in them, excuse me, everything that the modern university has, plus the whole esoteric dimension. And basically, the microcosm is that which is studied in the preparatory esoteric schools, the microcosm. That's us, you know, and well, anything can be a microcosm, really, but, you know, it's the lesser compared to the greater. And we learn a lot about our own functioning. And when we are studying glamour, as we have been for the past hour and 45 minutes or so, it is a microcosmic study. It's all about our psychology and what may prevent us from really seeing the truth and understanding the truth. So it has to do with something that we have to do within ourselves in order to make our apprehension of greater things possible. But when the advanced schools come along, as they inevitably will, and even what the Tibetan wrote in Letters on Occult Meditation back in 1920 and those days, says some of these advanced schools are already taking root in certain places. I think California and somewhere maybe in Australia, and there are seven of them and seven of the preparatory schools, and they are about the macrocosm. They are about the bigger picture. Now, I know that, you know, in what I present and try to offer, that it's a mixture of microcosm and macrocosm. But it's a big leap. You know, we were talking about how we make mistakes within our energy system and how we misappropriate ideas and turn them into rigid ideals and devote everything we've got to the perpetuation of a partiality, and how that really prevents us from fully participating with the divine plan. It's about our discipleship. But the Treatise on Cosmic Fire is about the initiated mind, whatever, you know, that really is. Having knowledge is good, and having love is good, and being able to acquiesce to the will of a higher being at whatever level we may find ourselves is also good. And all of them together are required if we are going to understand the initiated mind. So, you know, that's why this book is said. It's written on the first ray and the third ray, but, of course, whatever Master DK writes, obviously his great second ray is going to come through that. This book will give us a very technical picture of what's really causing our outer events to happen. And, you know, it's worth years and years of study, just the way the secret doctrine is. So we're still here in the beginning, and we're not really rushing. I've always, as an Aries type, I've always been, rush in my life, but I think that we will benefit from going as deeply as we can into things. And as I said, if you want to kind of read ahead or deal with some things that we might not have time to deal with here in these programs, you can go to Makara and you can find the first maybe 1,100 pages written out with commentary, and then the last 100 or so pages, I said, well, I'm just not going to get this done. So I worked on video programs, and there are two and some 33, something like that, video programs as we're talking about the stanzas of Xian and the oh, so many stanzas of Xian and the first aspect of divinity. So there's a lot to think about, the whole book plus whatever the commentary may direct you to. What commentary is just us thinking together about what Master DK is saying. This is like a big study group, we're trying to assimilate what he has given us and not get fixated on any one thing. Because, it's so, according to our race structure and astrology, it's so easy to say, well, this is my favorite part, and just emphasize that over and over again. And there is some value to specialization. At the same time, we really need the broad point of view. And hopefully, however long our approach lasts, we will get that. Over the next few weeks, we have a lot of other offerings, as I said to the people, in the earlier webinar. And we have full moons and pre-full moons coming up. And we have the Saint Cecilia Day. It's just such a beautiful story broadcast. And the Sacred Pentagram broadcast, four of them, I guess, and then we get into a lot of broadcasting, because if you're interested in tuning in, if you can't be here with us, maybe, I don't know, maybe 15 people are coming from various places to join us in person. But whatever we do together, we will broadcast to you and webinar to you the best we can. And maybe if we're lucky, your voice will even be heard here in the temple. If I get my electronics straight, we've already met with a computer expert two times, and three is the charm. He has one more visit to bring to accord to us, and maybe we'll find that way of getting your voice right back into the picture on all these webinars and broadcasts. So it's not that our December presentations offer anything like a vacation. As a matter of fact, it's an intensification, and we're just suspending the ASK programs while we concentrate on this very heavy month of December with the Advent and the Christmas and the every 7 year cycle of the new group of world servers. So I'd just like to welcome you again, and for some for the first time. Anna is here, and two Annas, Anna Papadaki and Anna Sklar. Hi to both of you, Annette and Barbara, Brennan and Carson, and Catherine and Deborah and Francois. And Heike, Ishtar, and Joan, and Joanne. she's here too. And Yoke and Yohi. Karen, Kim, Leslie, Margot, Mariana, Marina, and Mariusz, and Natni, Nienke, Risto, Rose, Raz, and Stephen, Tia, and Vile. Vile, you and I have to talk a little bit, because you're here in the local area and want to discuss with you attendance, you know, that may be possible at the festival week. So we'll find a way. Zenaide, and yes, hi. Hi to everybody. And then on our staff, Michael Stacy is keeping us stable, and Tuya's there, and okay. So welcome. Now, we are here. This is program number 12 and a group program number 8. There have been maybe 4 other solo webinars, and we've been discussing the law of periodicity. I always think, you know, that the greatest of all cosmic clocks is the great breath. And if you're looking for an archetype, you know, a fundamental form of periodicity, it's the great breath. Exhalation, inhalation, the universe disappears. Exhalation, the universe appears, or a universe appears. Inhalation, a universe disappears. Doesn't mean it doesn't exist, it just disappears. It's no longer seen as it was before. So somehow that great breath is the great archetype of the law of periodicity. Now you can question, is it even real? Is anything real except the continuous isness of the utter, of the utterness, you know, the wordless thing you can't really talk about. It's beyond the range of all human thought, but the further I go with it, I think it's beyond the range of any thought as thought in universe. I think it's beyond the range of thought, period. I think that being or isness or beingness becomes so utterly intense that it absolutely absorbs everything or subsumes it or becomes it. It's the ultimate. And in that ultimate, there are no divisions. We've discussed that. And yet, mysteriously, though there are no divisions and boundaries, because it is the boundless, immutable principle, if you put a boundary in there, wherever, you're going to have number. And this, the great beingness has no number. It's the realm of no number at all. Realm of no number. So, okay. That's the incomprehensible as far as we're concerned. And I think, you know, I won't get into it, but I think I can justify the idea that even the Universal Logos is scratching its head about what is this ultimate, utter no-thing. But mathematics is interesting because you kind of need it a little bit. Not so much arithmetic, maybe, but some of the play between number and no number. You need that to kind of get a little bit of an impression about what this something is. Or really, I shouldn't call it a something, I should just call it a no thing. Okay, and I think we're getting some info in there in the chat box. And Joe, I will need to
It's talk. Okay, Michael. I just wanted to make sure I got it in. I'm on a very short internet line today.
Okay, well, okay. If you're around later, I want to talk to you about my missing document filled with hope and despair at the same time. All right. Now, so we're in the law of periodicity, and it's the fundamental law. I mean, you know, and unless there is number, you don't have this periodicity. You don't have the opposites of universe, no universe, universe, no universe. When you stop to think about the plans for salvation held out by the fairly childish approach to religion, you just see that none of these kinds of thoughts are taken into consideration. The infinite cyclic repetition of universes and the whole idea that you're not just a little being, a flash in the pan, but you are the life of every one of them. Now that, you know, that's a stretch, and maybe some of us, hopefully all of us, are coming closer to being able to make that stretch. So that's one big law. And it says here also, we're on page 6, boy, are we making progress here. But I guess, you know, that if we get the foundation solid in our minds, then other things will be a little easier on us, I suspect. So there are certain other laws in the system which are linked with this one, and some of them are as follows. These are cosmic laws now, so they don't just apply to a solar system or to a planet. The law of economy, it is the law governing matter, the third aspect. This law of economy, well, you know, you have to ask what really is matter. For me, the whole universe is a psychological event. I'm not alone in thinking this. And I just went with my own thought on it, and I just said, well, matter is the result of self-observation. It's not so much that consciousness is going to extend itself and perceive matter. It's just that consciousness arising and perceiving the perceiver, the result will be matter. So matter is self-perception from this way of thinking about it. I have various things here about the cycles of Jupiter and Saturn, you know, the stock market cycles, the bull and the bear, Jupiter and Saturn and all that, they have to alternate, of course, inevitably. There are just ebbs and there are flows, and the principle of duality somehow reflects this great cycle in which sometimes you have a universe and sometimes you don't. And of course, time is involved here, whereas for the great continuity, time is not involved. If you have no number at all, if you're in the realm of the absolute zero, looked at philosophically, you're not going to have time. So there's a big enigma there about how time appears and disappears, or at least any kind of experience of time. The waxing and the waning, these are the qualities of matter. And then, of course, the constituents of matter, we might say, self-division. Now, this is a little tricky. How many tiny perceptions, how many tiny self-perceptions is, let's say, the God of our universe capable of? I'm just keeping it right here in the universe. You know, in a universe, you do not have forever, 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 forever. You just don't have the time to have forever, forever, forever. There's got to be a smallest thing, a smallest self-perception. I call it a kind of a funny name, a yuppie, ultimate particle event for any universe. It's just a decision about self-observation on the part of the self-observer, which is the great logos of a universe. There's a God of a universe, we are that God, and we decide, okay, I'm only going to see myself fragmented in pieces which are only so small. I won't go on forever because I don't have forever to go on. Otherwise, the law of periodicity is abrogated, is, dismissed. You wouldn't have periodicity. You just have ongoing continuity, but you don't. So a universe has to have its boundaries everywhere, and it has to have its smallest ultimate particle event, which is nothing but matter, which is a self-observation. So what I'm saying, and you can think about it, and I can keep thinking about it, that matter is self-observation. Now, I don't even know if that's exactly what the secret doctrine says, but I do know that unless you have consciousness, you don't have matter. So this third, I'm taking it as far as I can go, okay? And if some thought comes up and says to me, oh, you can't say that, then I just ignore it and just keep on going with whatever is suggested maybe as true. So what is this self that is observed? I think that's a really good question. And is it the essence of all things, or is it a portion of absolute infinity selected by the great God that is above the universe, above any universe? What is the matter? what is this self that is observed? And I, in some ways, it's tough for the mind to deal with this, but I think, well, this great God, I call him the absolute deity, call him, it, her, whatever, you know, it's not, there's no division there. It can see itself as homogeneous, but it can also see itself as infinitely divided or articulated. And when it looks at itself, what is it looking at? I guess maybe the only thing I can say is somehow it's looking at essence, and what we have there in this God between the absolute and between the universal God, we have the ability to subdivide perception. The tinier the perception, the tinier the unit of matter. So I admit, okay, look, this is a really metaphysical view of the nature of matter, because we're used to dealing with matter in a very practical way in the chem lab and the physics lab, you know. We're used to dealing with the immediate fact of matter everywhere, and that we are made of it in a way. But I'm really going metaphysical on us, and I'm psychologizing reality. Basically saying that everything that we say is real down here is a perceptual, psychological actuality. A perceptual, psychological actuality, but it's not real in the highest sense. Well, you know, if that makes any sense to you, then you can think about it. This law of economy, it's the first or the lowest of the cosmic laws. And who knows, there may be other three somehow revealed, but generally speaking, three hovers above the seven. And I'll show you what I mean. All I have to do is find it. So if I go to this overstuffed computer, okay. Come on now. Oh, goodness. It's really overstuffed. It's taking a long time to get where I want to go. I just want to get to the F disk. And I want to show you the map. You know, you know the map by now, but I want to relate the three to the seven. And can I do that? Well, let's see, can I do something even easier? Can I do anything easier? No, I'm afraid that what's happening here is my computer, wait a second, AAB diagrams, okay. All right. So I want to go to chart number 5, the evolution of a solar logos. That's the biggest, probably one of the biggest maps we've got. And if it won't let me do that, then I'll just say it'll pop up at some point, and maybe I won't wait for it. But I'll say that there are three, Father, Son, and Holy Ghost, upon the highest plane. And there are seven on the plane immediately below it. There are seven monadic demonstrations on the monadic plane, seven big circles, as you will read in Letters on Occult Meditation, and three big circles on the logoic plane. And I'm just hoping that what I see happening here with this computer is not really happening. At least I hope to avoid my screen freezing like it did last time. Someone kindly said, well, it looked like you were in a state of meditation, but I'm sure that that was an exaggeration. It probably was more like a madhouse. Okay, law of economy. Then the next cosmic law is the law of attraction, and sometimes people add repulsion, because if you attract some, in a way you are rejecting others, until the greatest state of identification has been reached, where you identify as all things. It's the law governing soul, and soul is consciousness, even in a cosmic sense, and it's the second aspect of divinity. So there are attractions and repulsions, and the entities that are brought together because of combining many little pieces, we call them aggregations, are formed by the law of attraction. Otherwise, you just have matter just not very organized, maybe organized within itself, but you don't have a form. Now, the second ray is a real form-building ray. Yes, you have the form of an atom, and, you know, you have the tiniest example of form, but the real form builder is the second ray. So, you know, the nations, people of nations and races, they are brought together under this law of attraction, in which like will not repel like will attract like. It's a little different than the way it usually goes. So I have some examples of it, and it is the most important law operative in our solar system at this time. I think I'm not going to go chasing after things, because that's the surest way to make everything crash. And we have to understand how to use this law, how to use this law, which is a higher correspondence to the systemic law of love, how to use it so that the pattern of the archetype is preserved in the lower worlds. I mean, look, you know, if you're hungry and you just eat anything and throw together any combination, you're going to get sick. And if you, D.K. warns about, he warns the hosts and hostesses of the world not to throw together at the same dinner table those who don't belong with each other. They'll have nothing to say and there'll be no interaction. We have to follow, to a certain extent, birds of a feather flock together, because there's something to be learned by the fellow birds of a feather. And then later we can branch out, and it's happening more and more in TV now, you see it. People are somehow reaching out to others who are very different, and this is due to the coming in of the fourth ray, when opposites are being brought together so that they can harmonize. I remember, you know, you probably know Dr. Phil, and whatever you may think of Dr. Phil, he really has a way of popularizing psychology. He rents these houses and whatever, and he stages interactions, and he put together in the same room people who would normally want to kill each other, basically, because they were so far on the opposite area of the spectrum. An example, you know, he put two women together. One hated homosexuals and the other called the more normal approach to sexuality. She called them breeders. That was her contemptuous way of doing it. He threw together a white nationalist type of guy with a black woman. They ended up getting along the best at the end of it all, you know. But not, you know, at first, it's just such a terrible tension to be confronted with your own hatreds. And so it went. But more and more, there will be this reaching out of groups to other groups. But you have to have first the strength of knowing who you are and who are your brothers and sisters along a certain line. Then, okay, so that's the second law. And when you have a solar god like we have, who's a big heart center in a cosmic logos, okay, then you've got a very big law of attraction operating here in our solar system. And it's a Devic solar system. It's got 200 billion conscious units in it, something like that. And 140 of them are Devic, 140 billion, and 60 billion are human. And it has, and the proportions there are interesting, and the numbers are to be studied. You know how it goes. Eventually, there's 600,000 million units, conscious units, self-conscious units, in the three major solar systems. And that's the perfect number, you know. 1 + 2 + 3 is the same as 1 × 2 × 3. So in esoteric numerology, they call it the perfect number. So a law of attraction, that's what we're doing now. And we have to learn it. And we're in a position to learn it. Why? Because our planet has a second ray soul. Our solar system, our God, our solar logos has a second ray soul. Maybe Jupiter does too. Maybe those three together form kind of a triangle, you know. Two planets and one star. You can have triangles in that way. And they are among the most attractive, but eventually we live on a first-rate planet. And we have to learn how to deal with love and attracting the right types. Even, you know, even the Buddha basically said, look, be careful of the company you keep, because it's going to rub off on you. And you know the old saying, if you lie down with pigs, don't expect to come up smelling like a rose. You have to be discriminating in your attractions, even though later you may find the way to embrace everything and everyone under the ancient mantra, naught is but me, and you'll mean it and you'll know it. But the first step is not to allow this law to operate indiscriminately, because the plan demands that it operate in a correct manner so that the different larger forces are aggregated and strengthened so they can interact in the proper way for the summation, the synthetic summation of our particular planet. And, you know, something similar would go on for solar systems and other things too. So I'm sure you have felt the law of attraction operating in your life, and maybe not in the highest way, but maybe in a very high way. You know, you'll have to just examine that. Our values change. At first, we may be attracted to things which are strictly of the personality, later of the soul, later of the spirit itself. Then the third law, which is really the first law, is the law of synthesis. And it's the law, says the Tibetan, governing the spirit, or the first aspect. We talk a lot about synthesis, but really what is it, you know? Somewhere it, in his book, books, and I'm not going to go on a hunt because my hunting days for that particular quote are over. and he basically says, synthesis is, but unity has to be created. Something like that, very close to that. So unity is of the second aspect with a little bit of the first, and synthesis is of the first aspect, only a little bit of the second. You know, if you're looking at the will and you consider synthesis, it's got a lot of the second aspect of the will in it as well as the first. When it comes to the will to be, then I would say that's pure, somehow pure first ray. So somehow this law of synthesis is combining all the cycles. You know, Hegel, Francis has been going over those German philosophers. He had kind of a dialectic going with, there was a thesis and an antithesis or antithesis, followed by a synthesis. Okay, everything was put together, and not just in differentiation. See, there's a differentiated synthesis and an undifferentiated synthesis. Yeah, synthesis. Okay. And I would just say that the synthesis in differentiation is probably what we can get here at first. And it should not be prematurely entered, because the fifth ray should be utilized to study every little part and piece that's going to be brought together into this differentiated synthesis, in which somehow we still recognize that everything is the same thing. But then there's the undifferentiated synthesis, and this sense of all things being one and the same really becomes overpowering. And maybe sometimes that has landed on you, and you know, you say, well, I'm seeing difference, but it's not difference, it's all the same, you know. Now we're working on that in the identify as being group. Why should these laws be linked with the law of periodicity? Well, perhaps I'm offering a thought here. Because these three cosmic laws are achieved in time and by cyclic means. So time and cyclicity determine the law of periodicity. So, you know, not to get too complicated here, but all cycles are coordinated in the great synthesis, and their perfectly attuned dance is necessitated if the synthesis is to be revealed. And then I have some other reasons here why the law of economy and the law of attraction are also related to this law of periodicity. You know, you don't escape the law. Nobody escapes the law. You know, I told you about my old teacher. He just said, no one breaks the law breaks them. So that's something, you know, sometimes people say things to you and they make a real impression. So that was one of the ones that made a tremendous impression upon me. Okay, now, and here's from class discussion, other things emerged, and I brought them all together. But what's the main thing, I think, to to remember about this law of synthesis? It is a law in which the oneness of all apparently divided things are indicated as of one substance. When I say substance, I don't mean matter. I mean an energy standing below, standing below, standing below. In other words, we as souls, we are substantial to ourselves as personalities and having our lunar elementals and so forth. And we as monads, we are substantial to ourselves as souls and personalities. And the great God of our universe is substantial to everything that occurs in the universe, even though it's all the one being. And finally, the utter substantiality, the utter substance, and you can't call it matter, is the great absolute zero, you know, the utterness. Now, I can see that I've gotten into a lot of stuff here and tried to clarify these things, but if I go at that rate, it will be the year 2100 before we're finished reading these matters. So maybe you can do this yourself if you wish to. And I think maybe you'll find something in it. Maybe a few things can be said. The law of synthesis is the law which sustains the whole as the whole. Now, I want to talk about isolated unity. Of course, the word, it could have been isolated synthesis. DK says, well, I haven't chosen such a great word for this, and I'm limited in my choice of words. But isolated unity is very interesting because the real isolated unity makes the master, creates the master. What does it mean? Well, I live and you live in a world of multiple perceptions. But if the one which is all of those things that are perceived, if the one can be seen, if the one can be noted, you know, experienced, I don't know what we'd call it, then despite all of the movement and the division and the harmony and the disharmony and all the rest of it, everything going on around us, going on, then you have isolated the one, despite everything happening. That's quite a skill, you know, and it's something that should be practiced because, you know, even though we're not masters, we can begin to move in that direction of isolating the one. At the same time, if we want to call the one the unity, then we've isolated the unity. If we want to call the one the synthesis, then we've isolated the synthesis. And the overwhelming fact for us is not all the divisions, all the numbers. I'm here in a temple. I don't know, there must be potentially, if I focus on things, there must be, you know, 500 different possible perceptions here. But if something in me can awaken, which isolates the oneness of all those perceptions, then I'm in the state of isolated unity or isolated synthesis, and thus it goes for the whole world. This is the attempt to solve the enigma of the many and the one. So there's a continual stripping away of variety. You are not captivated by differentiation. So many of us, you know, our ordinary life, there's a lot of things, and they are our prison. We are captivated by diversity and differentiation. My phone just doesn't want to quit there. But we don't have to be captivated. The impression of the one can be so strong that no matter what appears, it cannot rope in your consciousness. It does not have to make you a slave to diversity. Think of it. You know, isolated unity or synthesis versus being a slave to diversity. Now, in the beginning, you can't help it. You're going to be captivated by difference and diversity, and basically, you're going to be captivated by number. But later, you will not be a slave, and you will not be captivated by number, and you will have entered the realm of no number, as Madame Blavatsky talks about it. Probably, you know, if I'm to look at this, and I see in a way there's, you know, there's the work that you and I are doing together. And that's only half the work. Because if you really want to get into it, you'll maybe have to do some reading here and some thinking. But when I'm thinking about utter synthesis, sin, S-Y-N, very close to same, you know, I'm thinking about only one no-thing. I'm thinking about pure be-ness. I'm thinking about something I can't think about. It's just, it's too little to think about and too much to think about. I'm thinking about the ultimate. That's the real synthesis. And then we take it down in different demonstrations. Even on the Buddhic plane, we can reveal something of the synthesis, as it says here, whichever is. So we have to, it's not so much extensive as it is intensive. You know, there's one of those rules in Ray's initiation, and talks about the group onward moves in life. That doesn't mean it knows more and more and more and more. It means it just intensifies its identification as life in such a way that the ultimate comes closer and closer. And even mysticism cannot capture us. No sense of duality can capture. So I hope you get some idea of it, you know, and that I get some idea of it. It's a different way of studying diversity. The fifth ray comes along and it loves numbers. and it divides everything up in pieces. And that's good for handling things in the world of illusion. But then other rays and other ways of perceiving must come along and put all those pieces back together. Not so there's cracks between them, that's just unity, but so that they're all the same thing. Now it seems wild to talk about diversity being all the same thing. But I believe the deeper truth will reveal that it is so. So finally I come to the idea, you know, I'm just skipping around here, and you can read more in depth if you wish, that synthesis, that isness is synthesis. You know, if I'm looking at a bunch of things, and believe me, I'm, you know, here's a microphone, here's a projector, here's a candelabra, here's a phone, there are a lot of technical things here. Here are chairs, blah, blah, blah. Okay. I'm looking at all this. Do they share anything in common? Well, you know, maybe some chemical constituents and maybe a certain range of vibration and so forth. But the one thing that they all share is that they are. And they are because there is a self which self perceives. Now, the great beings, when they self-perceive, they produce things. Things appear. So, you know, if I can look at two really strange things, like they have nothing to do with each other in terms of form, but they are. Each one is, they are. And that's the isness of it. And they are in synthesis because they are. Now, if you can go around in your life and spend a few minutes just tuning in on the isness of anything you see and forgetting for a moment the quality of that which you see, good or bad or indifferent, doesn't make any difference. Is it a good man, a bad man, whatever, normal. But the perception is, whatever you're perceiving, it is on one level or another. And that is absolutely shared in isness, in beingness. And that's the real realm of synthesis. But down here, when we talk about the law of synthesis, we just want to know that everything we see, basically, and touch, and all, it's part of the one. And basically, it is the one. So when you have in mind the law of synthesis, it means that the one is always in your consciousness, regardless of any differentiation which you might also see in the world of illusion. I hope I'm being clear. Now, being clear is not enough. Experiencing is what is needed. Or experiencing, you know, somewhere in the Yoga Sutras, it says there is this sutra where the yogi experiences all things as if they are going on within himself. I think that is possible. Without pride, without exaggeration, without egotism, it is just a way of perceiving beyond normal limitations. And then it is that the law of synthesis begins to apply. And in a way, you can never escape the synthesis of things on one level or another. You can, you know, expel yourself from the unity and stand apart like the Black Lodge does. But when it comes to the essence, and synthesis is of the essence, even those very separative beings cannot eject themselves or be ejected. They will be brought back into it, because after all, there's only one being. What can you do? In terms of good and bad, they may have been bad rather than good, but when we're dealing with isness, we're beyond good and evil. We're in the realm of something that is uniquely itself, and there's nothing else than it to alter it in any way. It is unalterable, the boundless, immutable principle. Now look, I'm going into this a little more deeply with you, because maybe it's a section of the secret doctrine that is usually skipped over. Oh yeah, there is a boundless, immutable principle, good. There is a law of periodicity, good. All souls are at one with the Oversoul, and we'll be dealing with that very soon. As a matter of fact, maybe we're not going to deal with it. Maybe he looks at it a little bit differently here, because that's the one that's given in the secret doctrine. And maybe I'll just have to say a little about it if in Cosmic Fire he approaches it differently. I think I would say, but that's what I've been saying, really. All souls, all consciousnesses are part of one great consciousness, and in fact are one great consciousness. And there's no way that you can permanently escape the consciousness of the Oversoul, and by that I mean the universal soul. I don't only mean that there's a solar angel here and it's doing good things for your consciousness. I'm talking about the real Oversoul, which is the consciousness of the God of our universe. Of course, there's still a higher Oversoul, and once the universe disappears periodically, then that Oversoul is operative. It's the Oversoul which perceives absolute infinity. But anyway, there is one consciousness in all of the universe. And our consciousness is that consciousness, even though temporarily our consciousness seems to have limitations. So those limitations will be eliminated, and we will be left with universal perception, and will prove that whatever we've been, as we came down into matter, you know, and got smaller and smaller and smaller in our scope, that we have had a consciousness that is one with the universal consciousness. And as we grow spiritually and eliminate our wrong identifications, then more and more we realize that there is but one consciousness in this universe, and that we, our consciousness, is that consciousness, and it's no different from the consciousness of everybody else. It's almost like you, maybe an uncomfortable thought for some, but it's like you kind of inherit what's been going on in the consciousness of the isolated members. You feel that someone else really is lacking in consciousness. I'm sorry, but it's your consciousness too, you know. You feel that some consciousnesses are being applied in an evil way, but who's doing it? There's no one else to do it except the one being in the universe. So pretty soon all those little balls, they melt into each other, you know. I was showing you what that was all about, and I don't know if they let me do that or not, you know. Oh yeah, that, you know, I mean, before you know it, out of all these little circles, there's only going to be one left. And every little circle is actually the big circle. So what we have to do is be very cautious in our expansion, because you can kind of, if you don't do it in the right way, in a controlled and stabilized way, you can just get lost and deranged and mad, and you have to start back again. If you do it the right way, according to the Ageless Wisdom and its methods of development, then anything that is perceived in consciousness in the universe is your perception. In fact, in a way, your self-perception. Now, these are different kinds of thoughts, because usually we're very busy studying the particulars of our particular little environment, our Earth environment, or our solar systemic environment, really, really tiny, compared to what you might be able to look into. And we don't necessarily think of these larger, inclusive situations. But every once in a while, it doesn't hurt, and we can continue to learn what the more ordinary mind and heart reveal. And that's good, and we should. But we do both. We do both. Okay. Now, it seems to me, there are three cosmic laws. There are seven systemic laws which govern the manifestation of our solar logos. And I just have the feeling that since this is a whole unit of work, that I better not get into it. If you, realize that we're just kind of going along slowly, I just would ask you how fundamental in your consciousness are these principles. How well anchored are they? Is it something you might just read in passing and say, oh yeah, there's a boundless immutable principle onto the law of periodicity. Okay. The implications of these fundamentals have to register in your consciousness. They have to be anchored, that's all I can say. And I don't know anybody in the flesh who has sufficiently anchored these fundamentals, and I certainly include myself. So, and that's why I go slowly here. Now, we'll see. Do we pick up speed and so forth, but probably you can help by reading a few things on Makara, and you can probably do that, and it will help overall. So in terms of pages, we're not setting the world on fire. It's already set on fire. No worry, we're still on page 6. Okay, well, Roz is being very kind here and telling me it feels like a perfect pace, okay pace. I guess, I have such an eagerness in me to really absorb what is here and to do it in such a way that we all are ready for the next dispensation. We can only imagine that the Tibetan's not going to go downhill. If Alice Bailey's material offered more than conventional theosophy, which I think it did, because you have the Tibetan writing himself, not just giving the charts and so forth to HBB, who was, you know, a wonderfully brilliant person, but not yet a master at that time. It's not going to go downhill. It's going to go up and become more difficult. And yeah, it's, what do they say, Kim, that the personality is in a hurry because it realizes the time is short, but not the soul. And not the the one who realizes that a truer identity is infinity rather than all the other lesser things we think we are. So if you do get a chance to go to Cosmic, or I don't know, maybe Joe has sent you some of these things. Have you, Joe?
Not this time. I posted them in the chat box last time, and as we close this set, I'm going to send out a summary email with those reference pages for everybody who's in this group.
Yeah, and in fact, you know, I'm still on the very first page, the very first document. So in a sense, even if they got the first one, it would be adequate. It would be adequate. So here we go. And although I would really like to continue this, there's so much else that's going on in December that we'll just have to wait for the nice solid month of Capricorn to probably keep working. But meanwhile, you could, except, you know, that I know what a busy time it is for families and all the rest, you could get into it if you wished and, you know, just kind of absorb from another point of view. So if this is the 29th, then we'd be talking about the 6th of December.
And those of you who have received the reminder, don't worry, we put a date in that would hold this link open for us. So you'll get an updated reminder from GoToWebinar when we have the correct date and everything's set.
Okay, that's good. Very good. I mean, look, we're together, we're in a big, big study. No question about it. And if you have the patience, you will come out the other end with a lot more comprehensive ability to think, you know, deeper and wider than at present you do. And same for me. So, you know, this will test us. This will test us. Begin. How do you spell beginning? I mean, maybe there we go. Okay. All right. So this is going to be our warning stop, and we'll start again in January. And also, I want to say, please start thinking about coming to the actual conference in Chandler, Arizona, on the site of an ancient ostrich farm 100 years ago. A lot happens there, and you may not only learn something, you may enjoy yourself. So I'd love to find a way to have more of you come along. It'll be our 34th conference now. And we have to go to 39 conferences in order to reach the all-important year 2025, the time of the great conclave. So somehow getting together in person once a year, I think it's a really good idea. And, you know, God willing, I'll show up too. And I'd love to see you there. Now, let's open, you know, we haven't done a lot, but we have talked about the three cosmic laws. And, you know, they are absolutely fundamental. And if I'm going to look at this, that was it. I went beyond it. This is not the one I usually use, but look, always the three above the seven. Isn't it interesting? Three cosmic laws apply to the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost, to put it in Christian terminology, or to, you know, we could say apply to Shiva, Vishnu, and Brahma, red, blue, and green. And it's interesting that some variation on those three colors, you give yourself a light wheel and you've got yourself the color white, if you can call it a color. That synthesis of all factors, that's a great example of it, I think. That apparently you have differentiation of all these different colors, but then you get them on the pinwheel or something rotating rapidly and there it is, it's all white. It's all the same thing. So, you know, every once in a while we can find a good example that locks into our minds and explains these things to us. I mean, look, to say that we're anything other than beginners, we are beginners, okay? Let's just admit that. But it's not so long. Remember, the period of acceleration is upon us. And while DK doesn't want to see you rush here and there, rush from point to point, rush not so from point to point, nor be deluded by the things which pass away, you know. He does want to see you accelerate. And so he says, organize for speed. Organizing for speed. He says that in the books here. And it's needed, because before long, many masters will be needed to meet humanity's needs. Okay, friends, so now, your thoughts, anything you might want to ask? A few of you have offered helpful little thoughts, and I appreciate it. So we're, you know, Kim is here, and she's okay with the pace, and I'm just doing what I can do.
Michael.
Yes, Michael.
If you turn to page 550, in Cosmic Fire.
Well, why do I tremble?
It's all good.
Yeah, it's all good. Okay, hold on. Yeah.
We see that these three major cosmic laws are all part of the laws of thought. And this ties in with identification.
Yes, interesting. Especially since every three is a nine. You know, it can be that that the three fundamentals that he's given us are somehow related to the lowest of the super divisions, like a greater Brahma or a greater Vishnu or a greater Shiva. I'm always impressed how the three becomes the nine, and the nine becomes the 12. We'll get into that, but that's a good thing to have in mind, Michael. I guess coming fresh as you are from a lot of study of these laws, you know, the right thought hits you.
There's so much more study to do, and in this study, there's these three major cosmic laws, but then there's also greater cosmic laws.
Yes, and he tells us about some that we have no notion about. And he does seem to separate the intermediate law of karma from the three that we usually consider. So maybe there will be the revelation of something still higher and further in the dispensation coming. Meanwhile, we owe it to the man He's worked very hard to get this to us, and so has Alice Bailey. We owe it to assimilate. And to, I mean, you know what I mean, bring it in and assimilate it into our mind and consciousness somehow.
Not only into our mind and consciousness, but become a part of our life expression.
Yes, I think that's very important. Sometimes we talk about knowing the divine plan, and sometimes we talk about actually being the divine plan. So, you know, the more real all of this becomes, and the more our expression aligns with it and even becomes it, the more we are really serving the God of our planet and beyond and beyond and so forth. So, gosh, it seems a long way, doesn't it, Michael, when you look at page 550, and considering where we are right now, I guess it's a long way.
This is just an introduction to many of the topics which he goes into much greater detail.
Yeah, I mean, for instance, you know, the whole magic thing is in a big book, and the whole psychology thing here in Embryo is in two big books, and there's questions about astrology, and it's a big book. And so let's just say the seeds of so many of the activities that he would write about are right here in this book. Well, we will persist. Thank you, Michael, for your thoughts on that. We'll hear more from you about cosmic law. I just have this funny feeling, don't you?
And why not?
and why not, indeed? And why not? Okay. So carrying on with Kim here, that, I'll do my best to be trusting Kim. And let's see. And tell you what, about accommodations for the conference.
I already connected her up with Joanna White.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. Okay. Thank you so much. And, yeah, it'd be great too. I mean, people do come from all over, you know, Australia and New Zealand. And I guess, you know, we have students in India, but, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean that they can afford that kind of thing. There are some very, very wealthy people in India, but you look at more than a billion, and if they find us on the internet, that may have to be the way that the learning takes place. The teaching will spread, and it must spread all over the world and win the day by the end of, well, by the end of the present century. Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Okay, now, other thoughts, anybody that you would like to share? Joy, I'm just muting you there for a second because there's some extra. Then just unmute yourself when you want to speak. Okay, look, you know, like basically the three fundamentals of the secret doctrine. We're going to be getting into that, and we've done the first two, and this last, the three cosmic laws are aspects of the second fundamental. Now, I'm wondering, I haven't looked ahead very far, I'm just relying upon myself somehow to know something, and I'm not sure. Is the, here it is, number three. Well, we're not quite there yet, are we? But he didn't release it. In other words, it is definitely part of what we're going to be doing, and all souls are identical with the Oversoul. So that's a good one to sleep on, and we'll be dealing with that pretty soon. Let me just think of it. All souls are identical with the Oversoul. All consciousnesses are fundamentally identical. And the property, the consciousness property of any other emanated being is as much yours as it is theirs. Not only that, but you are as much they as you are yourself, as you are yourself. So paradoxical things get said, and unless we really think them through in deep meditation, they're just going to remain paradox, just something someone said. But if you really begin to get into it, the many become the one. The many merge as the one. And then we really will prove to ourselves one fine day that naught is but me in the big, big capital. It's a great proof, you know. If you can have even a minute of our normal time when naught is but me, then you know, you've pretty well captured the essence of all the religions we have that are striving towards that and say a whole lot less, basically. So we're working on it, right? And we will achieve. Okay? Are there any other questions about anything in the esoteric realm here? You know, each of us has a little piece of it to bring forward for the for the benefit of others. And like Voltaire said in the novelette Candide, he said, well, you know, world is out of control here, but let us each cultivate our own garden. And the fruits of that garden, whatever grows there, can be offered to others, but we have to tend to what we can really offer, because we are all part of the divine will. We are the divine will, and we are the divine being, but in our emanated state, a certain fragment of that divine will has been assigned to the emanation that we are. It's sort of the, Dwayne brought this forth at one point, Dwayne Carpenter, it's the word that's written within the white stone. In the white stone is the pattern that we are supposed to bring forward. Shambhala is called the White Island sometimes, and this white stone is our deepest identity that we're meant to bring forward. So everybody, you know, mixing the metaphors again, has to cultivate his or her own garden and bring forth fruit and share it, and then discover some amazing things about being the other, being the other. That's all I can say. If I say I love you, that's important. If I say I am you, it's even more important. So, but of course, I have to know what I'm talking about. Words are used easily, and they don't have the depth they could have. So when we have the depth and we say the big things and we mean them, then everything has changed, and even our kingdom has changed. We've at least entered the kingdom of souls, you know. Okay, other thoughts, because we're reaching now. I try to not keep you too long. Obviously, I thought to myself, well, it'd be possible to talk about these things all day, really, and try to get deeper insight all day long.
So, Michael, just to remind people that in the chat box, Olivia's note about the silent minute.
Right, on the 21st of December, I believe. In your own time zone.
Yes, and then we'll be sending out a list of events.
Right.
Beginning with the Finnish Independence Day on Friday, the 6th of December. And then the 13th of December, St. Lucia's.
Yeah, you know, the old song, Santa Lucia. It's a popular song. It's probably written in Mexico or South America. Nice song. And she had the ability to see. It's so Sagittarian, you know, and the ability to see and the ability to sacrifice. So her story is, I don't know any of us who'd be willing to do what she did, but I won't say more. I won't say more about that. If you're interested, you know, then, I mean, every nation, you know, has its flag and its motto and its ideal. And it's part of the whole. And we've just experienced here about 100 years, just a tiny bit more than 100 years. And we like to celebrate. And of course, it is the case that it happens. It's been happening in the United States, you know, in relation to 1776 and all that. Maybe by 2026, which is 1 year beyond the conclave, we will have reached, would it be 250 years? Wait. Or is it 36? 1776, 26. Yeah, no, 26 is correct. 26 is correct. 250 years of the American experiment. And other nations will find their particular date from which they date their existence and celebrate accordingly. There's so much, everyone, but we've got to learn it and apply it and spread it, you know. Right. Joe and I will just stay on the, after I turn off the recorder, we have to try to find the missing document. I'll tell you, stay awake when you're at the computer, otherwise strange things can happen. Okay, friends, any final question, statement, whatever? And if not, let's just, this is where we'll begin in January. Not with the Oversoul, we have still to go back a bit. And remember the reading that you might do, the study that you might do is found on Makara. If during the busy season of Advent and so forth, you can find it, find time. It takes not just centuries, but millennia to produce a scholarliness like that of Master D.K. So he, you know, he already in 600 B.C., he was very far advanced as the second in line to Pythagoras in the Crotona Academy. And who knows what went on before that. So it will take time, but at the same time, there is an acceleration in process. Now, can you go through an acceleration without a sense of rush? I kind of direct that to you, Kim, and I would say, yeah, you can. It is possible to accelerate without getting frantic about it, you know, because in the rules of the road, there is no rush, nor hurry, nor is there time to lose. So right in the middle, on the noble middle path, we have it. All right, friends, so now We've been together here for about an hour and a half. That's a good for tonight, I think. And let's close with something closer to home. Great invocation. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Okay, we continue with the Ask program tomorrow on the Soul of Nations in the evening schedule, and then the last Ask that we'll do is Sunday, and we'll suspend it, you know, it's up in the air, ready to happen, until January, while we do all these other things. And so the whole team, you know, Joe and BL and Michael and Tuya and Olivia, myself, we all thank you for being present, and lots of love, many blessings. And this will be, these two webinars from tonight will be available to you. And you'll find them on Makara if you want to go there. And then later I'm doing what I can to get them on YouTube as well. It's a big job, and I don't know, maybe volunteers are needed. So all the best to everybody, and we'll be talking to you soon. Okay, bye-bye for now.